At first, it looked like a boycott, just another online backlash. But behind the tweets, behind the hashtags, was something far more sinister. Fake outrage, synthetic identities, and a silent war waged by machines, manipulating public opinion, hijacking Black voices, and crashing billion-dollar brands with coordinated psychological tactics. I'm an investigative journalist, and what I uncovered isn't just about Target. It's about how weaponized algorithms are rewriting reality, one protest at a time. This is the dark psychology of influence. This is true crime in the age of artificial chaos. This is the manipulation behind boycotts. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform now, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. The boycott that wasn't real. I didn't think much of the assignment at first. Just another headline. Another corporate scandal. Target rolls back its diversity, equity, and inclusion pledges. And predictably, the internet caught fire. Hashtags everywhere. Hashtag boycott Target. Hashtag economic blackout. Hashtag cancel Target. Screaming across timelines like broken alarms no one knew how to shut off. I was on my fourth day of post-holiday decompression. A lukewarm oat milk latte. My dog curled up beside me. I remember watching a TikTok of a guy burning Target merch in his driveway, saying they were betraying America by going woke, or not going woke enough. It wasn't even clear which side he was on. The comments were worse. Hundreds of them, most identical. Phrases copied verbatim. Usernames I'd never seen before. Avatars that didn't feel human. And that's when it started. My editor sent me a text. Can you look into the Target stuff? Something feels fake. He was right, but none of us knew how deep the fakeness went. By Monday morning, the backlash had grown teeth. The stock was down nearly $12 billion in market cap. Financial analysts on CNBC were speculating on consumer boycotts. Conservative influencers were calling it a victory for traditional values, while leftist circles cried betrayal. But what struck me, really struck me, was the pattern. I ran a basic cross-platform scan using our newsroom's toolset. A third of the Twitter accounts using hashtag boycott Target were created in the past 90 days. Most had fewer than 5 followers. Many were completely empty. No bios, no prior posts, just retweets of the same 4 articles and reaction GIFs. Red flag. I clicked through 50 of them, then 100. Same cadence, same language, same timing. I mean, down to the second. And all of them posted in waves. 2:07 a.m., 3:12 a.m., 4:39 a.m. Coordinated. But it wasn't just Twitter. Instagram comment sections were loaded with fake engagement. Target hates you. Boycott the woke trash. Stand up for real Americans. Some of these comments had no account photo. Some had profile pictures stolen from Russian real estate sites. I reverse image searched one. It led me to a Latvian man who hadn't posted in 5 years. That night, I called Ryan, a contact I'd met at a digital intelligence firm called Cyabra. He answered on the first ring. You're calling about Target, huh? His voice was low, cautious. You're not the first journalist who's noticed. He sent me a heat map, a breakdown of hashtag usage over the past 10 days. The spikes weren't natural. Normally, when a scandal breaks, you get a slow build followed by a media echo. This looked different. The peaks were surgical, timed, pushed. The report estimated that over 39% of the backlash posts were fake, generated, automated, bot-driven. Ryan said, "You're looking at a coordinated digital campaign, possibly foreign, definitely intentional, possibly financial." That's when my stomach turned. This wasn't just a culture war. It was a precision strike, one designed to look like grassroots anger. But underneath it all, it was something else. I stayed up all night, not scrolling, hunting, tearing apart the patterns. I noticed the hashtags changed slightly depending on time zone. On the East Coast, hashtag boycott Target was pushed hard during business hours. On the West Coast, it was hashtag economic blackout, especially between 7 to 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Prime after dinner doom scrolling. I asked myself, why would bots care about DEI policies? They didn't. That was the whole point. They didn't care about gender pronouns in employee handbooks or the color of mannequins in ad campaigns. They cared about destabilization and stock price. I couldn't stop shaking. Target wasn't just caught in a political crossfire. It had been targeted. A test run. A battlefield. A digital experiment in chaos. And I was now part of it. The next morning, my article was pulled. No explanation. Just a short email from my editor. Legal review halted publication. Sensitive liability concerns. I stared at my screen. Legal review? For bots. My phone buzzed. Ryan again. This time, he didn't say hello. They're watching. Stop pulling data. Use Tor. Don't log into anything connected to your real name. Then he hung up. And that's when I knew. This wasn't going to be a story. This was going to be a war. The fake outrage machine. I started keeping two phones. One for contact with the newsroom, my email, and my editor, the clean one. The other? It stayed off unless I needed to use the dark web browser or check encrypted chats. That one never left airplane mode unless I was home with all the cameras covered. I didn't use to be paranoid. But after what Ryan told me, after that call, something in me shifted. The moment you realize reality is being scripted by software, you start to question everything, even yourself. The next clue came from a Reddit thread. r/opendisinfo. It's a sub most journalists don't touch. But I had to dig. Buried under a poorly formatted post titled, "It's Not Real. The Bots Are Back." Someone named /you/secondsunset had uploaded screenshots of an internal dashboard. The design was minimal, black background, gray nodes, but the content was explosive. A control panel for deploying fake accounts. Hundreds of user handles. Auto-generated BIOS. AI-crafted tweets. The interface showed activation timestamps. Every post was queued like a war room operation. Commands like spread hashtag cancel target. West Coast dump, wave 3 and engage hashtag isuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuuu not GPS, but political context. I messaged Second Sunset. No response. An hour later, the account was deleted. That's when I went to Ryan in person. He didn't invite me into the Cyabra offices. Said it was too risky. Instead, we met at a coffee shop in Arlington. The kind with password-protected Wi-Fi and analog clocks on the wall. He had shaved his beard. Looked nervous. Glanced at the ceiling as if there were microphones hiding in the light fixtures. You weren't supposed to see that dashboard, he said flatly. But I'm glad you did. Ryan slid me a folder. Actual paper. Inside were botnet maps. Literal constellations of fake accounts. At the center of each web was a launch point. Sometimes it was a proxy IP. Other times a data center in Ohio. One major cluster traced back to an unlisted server in Bulgaria. It's called Creekline. He leaned in. It's an AI-based sentiment weapon. You feed it a narrative, and it generates outrage. Automatically. At scale. I blinked. Who owns it? I asked. Private group. Possibly ex-military. Ex-CIA. No one's claiming responsibility. I asked the next question before I could stop myself. Why target? He looked around. His voice dropped. Because it's perfect. Middle America. Red state meets blue wallet. Add a hot-button issue like DEI, and you've got maximum friction. You don't need a real crisis, just the illusion of one. The scariest part wasn't the bots. It was the people who believed them. Real users, real outrage, real protests. All triggered by fake stimuli. The botnets only had to light the match. The rest. Human nature did the rest. Some influencers even joined in without being paid. Just chasing the algorithm like moths to digital fire. I saw a tweet go viral. If you shop at Target, you're part of the problem. Hashtag cancel Target. Tens of thousands of likes. It was posted by a woman in Texas who, hours earlier, had tweeted about yoga and gluten-free cookies. I ran her image through reverse search. Stock photo. She didn't exist. That night, I watched the financial news. A guest analyst claimed Target's dip was consumer-driven. Said Americans were sending a message. I wanted to scream. There were no Americans. Not in this campaign. Just machines. Scripts. Simulations. Automated rage wearing a human face. And the scariest thing? It worked. As I left the cafe, Ryan stopped me. You need to understand something, he said. This is just the prototype. They're testing how far they can bend reality. I looked at him. And when the test is over, he paused. They go global. Digital shadows and dirty dollars. I followed the money because it's the only thing that doesn't lie. Likes can be bought. Comments can be fabricated. Headlines can be spun, but the flow of capital, the trail of dirty dollars, that's the bloodstream of every campaign, including this one. It started with a server. The same unlisted Bulgarian IP address Ryan flagged as a control node for the Creekline botnet appeared in a WHOS domain lookup for a shell company in Delaware. Nothing unusual at first. Delaware's a haven for corporate ghosts. But I traced it anyway. Thermara Holdings LLC. No website. No employees. Registered agent listed as J. Carter Services. A common cover for legal fronting. I dug deeper. That same name showed up in over 300 other LLCs. All established within an 18-month period. And two of them, they'd made large cryptocurrency payments to cloud providers in Romania, Iceland, and Texas. That's when I stopped breathing, because Texas was home to Solstra Corporation, a former defense subcontractor that pivoted to algorithmic ad optimization. But according to a leak from a cybersecurity watchdog group, Solstra was allegedly operating influence campaigns for foreign political actors, which meant Target wasn't just a corporate casualty. It was collateral in an undeclared information war. I set up a burner signal line and cold called a source from my early journalism days, someone who used to audit black budget trails during the Afghanistan years. He didn't answer. But 12 hours later, he texted me a single word. Paloma. It was a lead I wasn't ready for. Paloma T. Njari was listed as a data asset broker for a Dubai-based firm called Veraco Holdings. A digital ghost, no social profiles, no public mentions. But in a financial disclosure obtained via leaked UAE filings, she'd authorized a $2.4 million transfer to a Nevada-based AI startup called Quellvox Inc. Guess what Quellvox built? Sentiment automation tools, market manipulation algorithms, social churn bots. The exact toolkit Creekline was running. When I connected the dots, it spelled out one ugly, undeniable truth. The outrage wasn't grassroots. It was investor-engineered. Rich people betting on stock volatility had funded outrage to tank Target's valuation. I flew to Las Vegas to meet someone who used to work for Quellvox. He didn't give me his name, only went by Travis, and only agreed to meet in the back booth of a strip mall bar at the edge of town. His hands shook as he sipped from a bottle of water. "We built it to track market sentiment," he said. "You know, brand buzz, product feedback. But it evolved. Real fast." I asked what changed. "Investors realized they could create sentiment. Just inject it directly. Like artificial demand, but for fear. Fear sells," I asked. He laughed, but there was no humor in it. "Fear crashes stocks. And when you're shorting companies like Target, that's billions in profit if the price tanks fast enough." He told me Quellvox used to run simulations. How many fake posts would it take to get CNN to cover a boycott? How many influencers needed to parrot a narrative before it showed up in Google's autocomplete? Apparently, the answer was not many. That's the part that haunted me. Reality was this flimsy, this programmable. And behind it all, shell companies, shadow brokers, people in penthouses making bets while the rest of us screamed at each other online. Before I left Vegas, Travis handed me a burner USB. Encrypted, password protected. He said it contained scripts used by the bots, templates for rage, replies, even fake DMs. One folder was titled BLM Reassignment Protocol. It held pre-written tweets under fake black identities, programmed to redirect conversations away from real racial justice and toward economic chaos. My blood went cold. This wasn't just a tech story. It was psychological warfare. They were hijacking black pain and monetizing it. Hashtag economic blackout. Wasn't just faked. It was weaponized. Back in DC, I called Ryan again. He didn't pick up. I messaged him on Signal. "I have names. I have files," he replied. "Be careful. We're not just dealing with bot farms now. These people clean up after themselves." He meant disappearances. I looked out my window. Three floors down, a black SUV had parked across the street. It hadn't moved in 2 hours. Weaponizing wokeness. There's a kind of betrayal that doesn't scream. It whispers. Uses your own voice. Your own cause. Your own pain against you. I didn't realize that was the game until I opened the folder labeled Engagement Boost, Woke Variant. It was on the USB Travis gave me, and it was the sickest thing I'd ever read. Inside were over 900 AI-generated tweets, each one crafted to sound like a black activist. but their purpose wasn't to uplift or inform. They were designed to divert, reframe conversations, create chaos, discredit real people, pit movements against each other. One tweet read, "Boycott all rainbow washing corporations. Pride is a corporate scam. Target equals enemy of black liberation." The timing? Days after Target removed LGBTQ+ products from select stores, following bomb threats and backlash. The bots weren't taking a side. They were fracturing both. I compared the file to live tweets from the hashtag economic blackout stream. 23 of them were nearly identical. Same syntax, same punctuation, different names, different faces, all fake. It wasn't just about Target anymore. It was about social movements being hijacked, voices that sounded like ours, speaking messages that weren't ours, pushing anger that wasn't organic. They were mimicking us. I reached out to an activist I trust, Chandra Willis, a media coordinator for a grassroots justice collective in Detroit. She's fierce, unbought, and smarter than half the think tanks I've met combined. When I showed her the tweets, she went still. This is digital minstrelsy, she said. They're using our cadence, our tone, our grief. And they're selling it to collapse markets and fund hedge funds. I nodded. Chandra sat back. Her voice cracked. People have been organizing for decades. Some died for this. And now, they've turned it into a meme farm. I told her it wasn't just black movements. They were doing it to LGBTQ+ groups, to veterans, to women, even to anti-capitalist anarchists. The bots didn't believe in anything. They just believed in reach. That's when I understood the true genius of the operation. You don't have to suppress voices if you can clone them. Why censor when you can flood the zone with noise that sounds right, but pushes left, then right, then up, then down, until no one knows what's real? It's gaslighting at scale. Not one victim, all of us. Later that week, Ryan finally responded. He sent one line. Quellvox call logs leaked. Check folder, archipelago. I found it in an anonymous drop, a 432-page PDF of internal Slack messages, timestamped call logs, and payment records. One thread caught my eye. Barackoops. Increased tension between black orgs and LGBTQ+ groups. Use DI backlash as bridge. Push narrative that DI hurts small black businesses. Amplify distrust. Disguise bot posts as pro-black anti-DI. I froze. This was deliberate. Mathematical. A blueprint for breaking solidarity between oppressed groups and profiting from the collapse. I called Chandra again. This isn't just about Target. It's about everything. They're coming for every movement, one algorithm at a time. There was a pause. Then, so what do we do? I didn't have an answer. Not yet. But I knew I had to go deeper. Deeper into the belly of this digital beast, even if it meant breaking laws, losing my job, or worse. Because this wasn't manipulation anymore. It was war. The $12 billion drop. Numbers don't scream. They don't march or chant or light things on fire. But if you listen closely, they'll tell you everything. And what I heard, when I finally traced the data, was a massacre. Not of people. Of value. Of reputation. Of reality. And it started with a number. $12.1 billion. That's how much Target lost in market capitalization in less than 2 weeks. I mapped the decline, day by day, hour by hour. The first sharp dip hit 3 hours after a surge of coordinated tweets using hashtag boycott Target and hashtag cancel Target. But here's the twist. The posts didn't come from verified users. They came from low-follower ghost accounts, most of which had no tweet history before that day. I pulled a heat map. They clustered around peak market hours, 9:30 a.m. Eastern, then again at 1:45 p.m. They weren't just angry. They were timed. Time to influence retail investors. Time to create panic. Time to trigger algorithms. The stock market isn't human. It doesn't think or feel. It reacts. And that's what the manipulation artists had figured out. They weren't just trying to fool people. They were fooling machines. I interviewed a former risk analyst from an AI-powered trading firm in Chicago. He agreed to speak under condition of anonymity. We met in the back booth of a Korean barbecue place in Logan Square. Loud music. Sizzling meat. Zero surveillance. He pulled out his phone and showed me a graph. It was Target stock price, overlaid with keyword spikes from Reddit, Twitter, and TikTok. "See this dip?" he asked. "That's when the keyword density of boycott and groomer hit a trigger threshold. Our bots dumped 400,000 shares in 90 seconds. I blinked. So you're saying AI sold the stock because bots were faking outrage? He nodded. Slowly. We didn't know they were bots. We just react to volume. If the chatter spikes, we move. Everyone does. That's the game now. The game. Where fake anger creates real market crashes. Where memes move millions. Where outrage prints money. I called it economic gaslighting. You wake up thinking there's a scandal. You pull out of your investments. You stop shopping somewhere. You tell your friends it's bad optics. But it was all manufactured. And by the time you realize it, someone else is already cashing in, shorting the stock, buying the dip, riding the chaos. That week, CNBC called it consumer backlash. Fox News called it wokeness collapse. CNN called it Target's culture war misstep. But none of them called it what it really was, a synthetic financial hit job. Because to do that, they'd have to admit they were part of it, that the media wasn't just reporting on a crisis. It was amplifying a con. Meanwhile, the bots kept pushing. New hashtags emerged. Hashtag shop elsewhere. Hashtag no Target for me. Hashtag stop woke retail. It was a relay race of disinformation. Every time one narrative burned out, another rose from the ashes. I compared user profiles again. A third of them had already participated in previous fake campaigns, Bud Light, Nike, even Disney. It was the same playbook. Same AI-generated posts. Same emotional bait. Same economic outcome. But this time, Target was just a test. Back at my apartment, I watched the market close. Target down another 1.3%. I refreshed my social feeds. Still trending. Still boiling. But it wasn't real heat. It was manufactured. Algorithmic. Engineered. A house fire built out of pixels. But it burned all the same. And outside my window, that black SUV was still there. Engine off. No one inside. Just sitting. Waiting. Bots, banners, and Black America. I used to believe our voices were sacred. That even if the world didn't listen, we still owned our truths. Our rhythms. Our rage. Our reasons. But when I saw what they'd done with them, how they'd bent black voices into weapons, aimed right back at us, I realized we were in the middle of a war no one warned us about. A war waged in our language. The script labeled Afro-infiltration was buried deep in the files Travis gave me. It was an operation, not just tweets, not just bots. It was a digital blueprint for simulating black consciousness, not honoring it, stealing it. The bots had learned to imitate the tone of real activists. They used culturally embedded phrases, protect black futures, stop performative justice, woke capitalism is still capitalism. At first glance, they looked like any grassroots response. But behind the curtain, no blood, no struggle, no lived experience, just code. One post read, Target's DI rollback proves one thing, black consumers are pawns. It's time we shut it all down. Hashtag economic blackout. It had 18,000 retweets, but the original poster didn't exist. The profile image was lifted from a Memphis barbershop's Instagram page. The name, a random pairing of historically black surnames. The bio read, Pan-African, rooted, loud. But when I traced the IP address, it originated from an ad server farm in Slovenia. I remember staring at the screen, sick to my stomach. They weren't just simulating us. They were monetizing our pain. I reached out to community leaders, real ones. Some didn't answer. Others did, but with hesitation. They'd already been burned. Chandra Willis, my contact in Detroit, told me something I can't unhear. We're not just being silenced. We're being faked. Replaced. She was right. Activists were being drowned out by bots that sounded more radical, more urgent, more aggressive. And when the Real organizers tried to speak, they got labeled as controlled opposition. Divide and delete. It was digital contlpro. And this time it wasn't the FBI. It was venture-funded tech. I found a message thread between two campaign runners at Quellvox. Here's what it said. Make sure Afro-influence bots don't get flagged. Inject real civil rights links every 7 to 10 posts. Keeps the illusion tight. Use subtle misspellings to mimic Ebonics. More traction. Don't forget to rotate causes. Transphobia Tuesday. Anti-DI Wednesday. Feminist Friday. They were rotating causes like hashtags on a social media calendar. Eroding solidarity one fake post at a time. Black liberation? just another market segment. And the worst part, it worked. Some real activists had already begun echoing the bot language. The manipulative posts didn't just trick outsiders, they tricked insiders. People I respected were unknowingly amplifying scripted rage, mistaking it for homegrown critique. And when I tried to warn them, they looked at me like I was the threat. That's how deep it had sunk. We weren't fighting bots anymore. We were fighting ourselves. One night, I followed a thread claiming Target's DI efforts were a front for child grooming. It had over 50,000 likes. The top comment, a bot disguised as a black father in Georgia. I won't let these stores push agendas on our sons. This ain't what MLK died for. It had crying emojis, American flag, Bible verse, and thousands of replies. Most cheering him on, some real, some not. And I realized something. This wasn't about Target. This was about hijacking morality, hijacking black parenthood, black leadership, black pain, to make it say whatever the algorithm wanted that day. I closed my laptop and stared at the wall. It felt like looking at a cracked mirror, a version of my community staring back at me, familiar, but wrong, synthetic, engineered, and terrifyingly effective. At 2:17 a.m., I got a text from a blocked number. Your people deserve better than what you're doing. No name, just that. Then my laptop restarted on its own. And when it came back on, the folder Travis gave me was gone. Gone, deleted, erased like it was never real. But I remember what was inside. And now, I was going to make sure the world remembered too. Inside the coordinated campaign. I used to think a coordinated campaign looked like a war room. Suits around a glowing table, pointing at red dots on a map, issuing orders through secure lines. But this war? It was waged through Slack channels, encrypted spreadsheets, an army of invisible fingerprints typed out in 10,000 keyboards across 20 different time zones. No uniforms, no flags, just strategy and a brutal kind of brilliance. And I was finally about to meet the architect. It started with a leak, an anonymous email, no greeting, no signature, just a subject line. You want real truth? Then meet me. Attached was a set of coordinates. A coffee shop in Atlanta. No cameras. Cash only. The kind of place where time forgets you. I flew out the next morning. And when I got there, someone was already waiting. He was mid-30s. Tan jacket. Dark-rimmed glasses. Hands that kept twitching. He gave no name, just nodded at the seat across from him and said, I built the targeting software. But I didn't know they'd use it for this. I hit record, and he started talking. He called it Project Skein, a distributed influence engine originally built to map brand sentiment. It was supposed to help companies understand emotional response, but in the wrong hands, it became a weapon. They used Skein to reverse engineer outrage, he said. Not just what people were angry about, but how to make them angry. The key wasn't in the content, it was in timing, demographic overlap, subtle contradictions. They tested which kinds of contradictions performed best. Black voices against DI. Gay influencers calling Pride a sellout movement. Latina moms decrying diversity in children's books. The goal wasn't to push one side. It was to erode consensus, turn the movement on itself, and then profit from the collapse. I asked who ran the campaign. He hesitated. Then he pulled out a phone and showed me a Slack screenshot. Usernames blurred, but timestamps intact. One line burned itself into my memory. Begin the DI discredit phase. Inject right-wing fire. Leftist critique will follow automatically. Trust the playbook. It was posted by a user with admin credentials, based in Tel Aviv, but routed through Panama, then bounced off a VPN server in Virginia. Whoever this was, they were global, funded, and protected. He said the campaign was approved and prepaid by a performance fund fronted by anonymous investors. People shorted the stock, he explained, then paid us to execute the outrage. If the campaign tanked the brand, they made millions. If it went viral, we got bonuses. I asked if anyone ever questioned the ethics. He looked at me. They didn't hire us for ethics. They hired us for outcomes. That night, I received another leak. This one damning. A PDF containing a detailed proposal to undermine DI brand narratives through simulated activism. It included influencer targets, platform strategy, and response flowcharts for when real users began catching on. At the top of the page, stamped in red, property of Quellvox Strategic Ops. At the bottom, in fine print, All efforts must maintain plausible deniability. Do not engage journalists. Burnable assets only. I was holding proof, not just of manipulation, but of intention. It wasn't a rogue experiment. It was a business model. I left Atlanta under a fake name. I'd booked 2 return tickets and only used 1. Tossed my burner phone in a Greyhound station bathroom. Wiped my laptop. But it didn't matter. They knew I was close. The next day, I received a package at my DC mailbox. No return address. Inside, a single object. A red Target employee name tag. Mine. But I'd never worked at Target. On the back, written in Sharpie, "You're next on the shelf." I didn't sleep that night. Not because I was scared, but because I knew exactly what Chapter 8 had to be. Revenge. Inside the coordinated campaign. I used to think a coordinated campaign looked like a war room. Suits around a glowing table, pointing at red dots on a map, issuing orders through secure lines. But this war? It was waged through Slack channels, encrypted spreadsheets. An army of invisible fingerprints typed out in 10,000 keyboards across 20 different time zones. No uniforms. No flags. Just strategy. And a brutal kind of brilliance. And I was finally about to meet the architect. It started with a leak. An anonymous email. No greeting. No signature. Just a subject line. "You want real truth? Then meet me." Attached was a set of coordinates. A coffee shop in Atlanta. No cameras. Cash only. The kind of place where time forgets you. I flew out the next morning. And when I got there, someone was already waiting. He was mid-30s. Tan jacket. Dark-rimmed glasses. Hands that kept twitching. He gave no name. Just nodded at the seat across from him and said, "I built the targeting software. But I didn't know they'd use it for this." I hit record. And he started talking. He called it Project Skein. A distributed influence engine originally built to map brand sentiment. It was supposed to help companies understand emotional response. But in the wrong hands, it became a weapon. "They use Skein to reverse engineer outrage," he said. "Not just what people were angry about, but how to make them angry. The key wasn't in the content, it was in timing, demographic overlap, subtle contradictions. They tested which kinds of contradictions performed best. Black voices against DEI. Gay influencers calling Pride a sellout movement. Latina moms decrying diversity in children's books. The goal wasn't to push one side. It was to erode consensus, turn the movement on itself, and then profit from the collapse." I asked who ran the campaign. He hesitated. Then he pulled out a phone and showed me a Slack screenshot. Usernames blurred, but timestamps intact. One line burned itself into my memory. "Begin the DEI discredit phase. Inject right-wing fire. Leftist critique will follow automatically. Trust the playbook." It was posted by a user with admin credentials, based in Tel Aviv, but routed through Panama, then bounced off a VPN server in Virginia. Whoever this was, they were global, funded, and protected. He said the campaign was approved and prepaid by a performance fund fronted by anonymous investors. "People shorted the stock," he explained, "then paid us to execute the outrage. If the campaign tanked the brand, they made millions. If it went viral, we got bonuses." I asked if anyone ever questioned the ethics. He looked at me. "They didn't hire us for ethics. They hired us for outcomes." That night, I received another leak. This one damning. A PDF containing a detailed proposal to undermine DEI brand narratives through simulated activism. It included influencer targets, platform strategy, and response flowcharts for when real users began catching on. At the top of the page, stamped in red, "Property of Quellvox Strategic Ops." At the bottom, in fine print, "All efforts must maintain plausible deniability. Do not engage journalists. Burnable assets only." I was holding proof, not just of manipulation, but of intention. It wasn't a rogue experiment. It was a business model. I left Atlanta under a fake name. I'd booked 2 return tickets and only used 1. Tossed my burner phone in a Greyhound station bathroom. Wiped my laptop. But it didn't matter. They knew I was close. The next day, I received a package at my DC mailbox. No return address. Inside, a single object. A red Target employee name tag. Mine. But I'd never worked at Target. On the back, written in Sharpie, "You're next on the shelf." I didn't sleep that night. Not because I was scared, but because I knew exactly what Chapter 8 had to be. Revenge. revenge of the algorithms. They tried to silence me with a name tag, a plastic smile, a message written in Sharpie, like I was just another disposable product. But the thing they never counted on was this. I don't scare easily, and I don't shut up. I stopped filing with my editor, switched to a private backup server I built on a flash drive no bigger than a key. I didn't go home, didn't answer calls. I spent 3 days moving through underground networks, activists, cybersecurity experts, digital archivists. I had everything. The Slack leaks, the PDF proposal, the metadata from Quellvox, the burner audio of the whistleblower admitting to Project Skein, bot ID logs, IP histories, even screenshots of fake black accounts pushing fake DI hate under stolen faces. Now all I needed was a kill switch. I called Chandra, told her the truth. I was going dark and I needed backup. She didn't hesitate. You built a case? She asked. I built an arsenal. She brought in a coalition of black tech orgs, truth tellers, and content creators with real reach. We mapped out a reverse campaign. Not outrage, but exposure. We called it hashtag reclaim the signal. Not a trend. A counter surge. Here's how we did it. We published a thread of real black activists explaining the scam, side by side with screenshots of bots using their names. We showed how sentiment dropped the stock price, how fake accounts triggered automated trades, how Quellvox got paid in crypto, and how the same investors were shorting Target, Disney, even healthcare firms. Then we made it go viral, not through fake posts, but through the truth, one real voice, one story at a time. Chandra's followers surged. My story hit Medium, Substack, Discords, Signal groups, WhatsApp chains. A few media outlets picked it up, slowly, then all at once. And within 72 hours, Quellvox's website was offline. Their investors were being named in financial subreddits. Their code was being picked apart by white hat hackers. Journalists in Germany and Brazil began connecting dots. Bots started glitching. Some even turned on each other. We'd hit the nerve. We'd poisoned their algorithm. And then they came for me. That same black SUV followed me for 5 hours through the back roads of Virginia. At a gas station, I saw a man in a gray jacket watching me from across the pumps. No phone, no car, just standing there like he was part of the shadows. I didn't flinch. I walked straight up to him and said, "Tell them it's too late. The virus is out." He said nothing, just turned and walked away. The next morning, Quellvox's former CEO was on leave. Three executives deleted their LinkedIn profiles. Their servers in Romania went dark. But the story was out. Too many copies. Too many hard drives. Too many people asking questions. The machine had turned on itself. And in its place, just data, ashes, and silence. I finally went home. The city was quieter. Maybe it was just me. I sat in the dark with my laptop and opened the only file I hadn't touched. A picture of myself. Before the investigation. Before the lies. Before the bots. Before the Sharpie. I looked into her eyes, my eyes, and I whispered. They tried to rewrite the truth, but we rewrote the code. Then I hit upload and let the world see. All of it.